Lake Effect continues on WUWM. I'm Mitch Tyke. If you are more than 35 years old and you grew up watching sports in Milwaukee, you probably have memories of an iconic basketball court. The playing surface at the arena called Mecca, now the U.S. Cellular Arena, did not look like other basketball courts. It was a surface designed and painted by Robert Indiana. He's the artist who designed the famous Love postage stamp. It was played on by the Bucks and the Marquette University basketball team until both moved to the Bradley Center in the 1980s. The court disappeared from public view, but tonight it returns for a single night's appearance at the U.S. Cellular Arena. The owners of the court, who call themselves Our Mecca Group, plan to turn the court into an evolving art exhibit. Andy Gorzalski and Ben Kohler are in the studio now to talk about what that means and how tonight's event came together. Welcome to you both.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thanks. Thank you.
What makes this more than just another former basketball court?
It's the world's largest pop art painting created by a world-renowned artist, Robert Indiana, of the Love generation, you could say. Robert Indiana was one of the pioneers of the pop movement with Warhol and Lichtenstein. And we, in 1977, had an opportunity to convince him to come to Milwaukee and design our basketball court that became his largest piece of art and also became the largest pop art painting in the world still to this day.
Well, and for people who haven't seen this, and we're going to put a picture of it up on our website, but how does it look different than the basketball courts that came before or really the basketball courts that are around now?
Basketball courts back then and to a large degree now are very utilitarian. You just have the sort of boundaries and the more technical parts of the game of basketball represented in just very clean lines, very simple, spare design. So even more so back then, it was – at best, sometimes just a colored lane that represented a team's colors and not much else. They weren't even putting, Cleveland or Buffalo on the baseline. It was just a very spare stage for the game.
Well, and really, basketball courts, they have to have the foul lines. They have to have the center circle. But there's not much more that they really have to have. Describe this for us. What does it look like?
Oh, the Mecca floor?
Yeah.
Well, the Mecca floor, what's interesting about that is they chose Robert as the artist because he had very geometrical shapes in his art, and he was very symbolic with numbers and letters. So they felt that he was the type of artist that actually could get a basketball floor right. So the Mecca floor has six M's in its design. They say it's good, in the words of Robert Indiana. But what's interesting about that is the M letter is actually Robert's favorite letter. And it's one of his favorite symbols because he looks at letters as symbols. So there's six M's in the design. Those six M's are significant and symbolic. They stand for Milwaukee, Mecca, the Milwaukee Bucks, Marquette, Steve Marcus, whose idea it was to make the Mecca floor. And since Robert's art was inspired by his mom, every athlete has a mom. So you'll see very predominant six M's in the court, and it takes on the colors of the home teams, which was green and red at the time, the Bucks, and blue and gold of the Marquette Warriors. And then also there's orange hues there because they wanted to allow the athletes to be able to have an easy transition from maple flooring to an all-painted surface, because if you're not familiar with the Mecca floor, it is the only all-painted professional sports floor in existence. So when they made the design, they wanted the transition to be easier on the players. I mean, Robert at first, he wanted a purple floor, but that didn't quite happen. So they compromised and they found a way to transition the players to something that wouldn't shock them totally.
Did it do something to put Milwaukee on the basketball map? I mean, was there something, I mean, aside from it being iconic for the people that came to games or played on the floor, this is a floor that people knew around the country, right?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Sort of at the dawn of the floor was the beginning of the Don Nelson era and the tail end of the Al McGuire era transitioning into Hank Raymond's for Marquette basketball. So the Bucks reemerged very quickly after the Kareem and Oscar Robertson era, and they ended up winning around 75% of their games on this floor. So it was a good omen of good times and winning and kind of a golden era of Bucks and Marquette basketball from 77 to 88.
Well, and so how did the two of you enter the picture, and maybe why did the two of you enter the picture?
I guess
part one of the story.
Yes. Well, the first step all starts with an email. I receive an email from my friend. It's a link to an architectural salvage site. Everyone knows I'm a huge Bucks fan, so he jokingly says, "Hey, you can buy the Bucks floor now and put it in your backyard and shoot around." So I click on his little joke, and lo and behold, it's Robert Indiana's Mecca floor on this listing. And it was sort of sad to me in a lot of ways because it just said, "Use gym floor." In the listing. No one knew that they had this beautiful piece of fine art in Milwaukee history. So I
had the Bucks just gotten rid of it?
Well, the Bucks moved across the street to the Bradley Center in 1988, and the Mecca Complex in the Wisconsin Center District kept it for a small handful of years, and then it kind of bounced around to different holding warehouses in their facility. It was eventually donated to a charter school that didn't quite make it, unfortunately, and then it was just taking up space in someone's warehouse, and it you know, it's a problem into it of itself. So it was just taking up space. Whoever ran the warehouse at that time said, "Let's get this thing out of here, just sell it."
Can I ask how much was it selling for at the time?
We always like to say for, you know, a couple of regular guys, a scary amount. Scary enough to like the conversation with my wife was fairly serious that day. So an amount enough to rattle your nerves that day.
like are you spending that much on a car? I mean, like ballpark?
Yeah, somewhere in that ballpark for sure. A really nice car.
Well, so why you're a big Bucks fan, but why you? Why is this such was this such an important thing to you that you know that this all had to happen?
Well, you know, in talking about this project, one of the people we talked to was kind of an auctioneer and memorabilia person. They were actually auctioning off the Dallas Mavericks 2011 championship floor. And one of the things he talked about was people will sometimes hang on to sports memorabilia as a symbol of their memories, and especially like the time with their fathers. We're always trying to wind back and get to that emotional place. So sports memorabilia, the players, the places where we had those experiences become emotionally important to us. So for me, being a Milwaukee kid in the 80s, I mean, the Bucks were my Beatles. They were always winning. Going to the Mecca Arena was a hard ticket. It was very special when you got to go to one of them. So even as a child, I sort of warmly remember sort of the golden glow of the floor, and it was very dark and dingy in there. And, you know, we had great teams and these epic battles. So there was a premium on what I recall for my life.
Well, and Ben, what's part two of the story?
Well, part two is, you know, Andy, you know, goes on a limb, takes out a personal line of credit, and convinces his wife somehow to allow him to do this. And in the process of, like, basically rescuing the floor, he sends out an email to some of his connections at the Milwaukee Bucks. And it was really interesting email because it had a whole lot of exclamation points in it. I remember I was looking at it last night and I was like, wow, he really put some exclamation in this thing.
Maybe not my best foot forward.
Yeah. But you could tell that there was this passion behind it, and there was this guy that was really, really passionate about it. And this email ended up being forwarded to Jim Paschke, who forwarded it to John Steinmiller, vice president of operations, who forwarded it to my father, Greg. And at the time, Greg had an athletic surfacing company, ProStar Incorporated, been in business for 35 years doing gym floors. And my dad, you know, built a company out of our basement in the inner city of Milwaukee and built it into a really, you know, well-known, nice-sized company that had over 25 employees and, you know, a couple $1 million a year in business. And so the Bucks were one of my dad's clients, and they said, "Hey, Greg, there's, you know, kind of just a small conflict of interest. We would prefer not to reach out directly. Can you check on this thing for us?" And I think they sent that with having no idea that my dad would actually be remotely interested or even have the capability to purchase this floor. And I remember we were in a meeting with the Boys and Girls Club director, Sam Williams, who actually played on the Mecca floor. And my dad literally just stood up in the middle of a meeting, in the middle of a conversation, and said, "Guys, I have to leave because I have to go see about a floor." And it was like that, the basketball version of Good Will Hunting. You know, it's like, all right, well, and then all of a sudden he comes back and he says, "You know, I just bought the Mecca floor." And I was living in L.A. at the time, and I had no real idea of what the Mecca floor was or what it represented or the backstory of it. I was an avid Bucks fan growing up. my dad was in the gym floor business, so, you know, and the Bucks were one of his clients, and he was a season ticket holder for 25 years. So I spent a lot of time watching the Bucks, but my era was in the Bradley Center. And so I remember asking my dad, I said, well, what are you going to do with this thing? I mean, you buy this floor during one of the most turbulent times of your company's financial history. You almost give my mom a heart attack because she's trying to figure out, you know, we're a family-run business, so how are we going to make payroll? And my dad, he had that, like, that kid that just got the bike at Christmas smile, and he looks at me and he says, you know, I have no idea what I'm going to do with this floor, but I have a vision. And he said, I want to celebrate the history of Milwaukee's innovation and Milwaukee's risk-taking and Milwaukee's our spirit of, like, being different. And I didn't really understand that because I didn't know what the story was at the time. And he said, I also want to take that celebration of this history that we have and also use it to inspire future generations. And, you know, it was very altruistic at the time, and I was living in L.A., and I said, well, Dad, that sounds like a great vision. See you when I see you, because I'm getting on a plane tomorrow and I'm going to back to L.A., so good luck with that. Fast forward a year later, I'm back in town to help my dad's company that's still in dire straits, and, you know, it was a very, very difficult time. And my dad, we had a meeting with a local artist, Reginald Baylor, and some people from the community to talk about how we could display the Mecca floor as a work of art and as this beacon of light in our city. And at that meeting, my dad basically nominated me forcefully to lead this project. Well, 4 days later, my dad died of a massive heart attack, totally out of the blue, totally unexpectedly, and just basically threw my life in this tailspin of, like, trying to figure out what to do with this company. And one thing led to another, and I knew that he had this vision for the Mecca floor, and I decided to purchase it from his company before the, you know, the walls caved in.
Well, and so how has your vision for the floor evolved? What's going to happen to it?
Okay, so I ended up meeting a guy named Jeremy Shamravich from Flux Design, who's probably one of the most creative people I've ever had the chance to be in person with, next to, like, a Robert Indiana or even Reggie Baylor. But Jeremy's is really – what I like about Jeremy and Flux Design and why I reached out to them is, for one, they're Milwaukee guys. So they're very, very adamant about Milwaukee and the city. And also, they're problem solvers. So we had this problem. Nobody could figure out what to do with a 7,000-square-foot piece of pop art. I mean, you have to have a really big wall, a really big ceiling, a really big combination of a wall or ceiling if you're thinking about in the general scheme of how do you display a painting. And Jeremy right away said, we're looking at it all wrong. It's not a floor. It is the world's largest pop art painting that comes in 264x8 sections. Let's build something with it. And I said, that sounds like a very intriguing idea. As long as that we can preserve the art and it can always go back to being a basketball floor, let's look into that. So we spent an entire year researching, developing, and designing what we now call the Mecca Sculpture, which is an interactive and interchangeable modular sculpture system that allows us to put the Mecca floor that is now the sculpture in different places. We can change the shape, and also it's an exhibit in the sense that we can tell a story, because the Mecca, to anybody that's listening right now, I think it's an intriguing story about Milwaukee, about creativity, about risk-taking, about innovation, about community coming together. So I knew that when we created this sculpture, displayed this art, that I always wanted to have an exhibit that would be able to tell a narrative and draw a person in. So, you know, Friday night is the night that we actually get to go forward with my dad's first part of the vision, which was to celebrate the history. So we're putting the Mecca floor in the Mecca arena where it was created for, laying it out like a basketball floor and saying, look what we did. Let's celebrate that. Let's bring the players together, the Steve Marcuses, the John Steinmillers, the Bob Lanier's, the different people, the Robert Indiana's. Let's bring these people together that created this thing and honor it. And then September 20th is when we're doing our first sculptural exhibit at City Hall, which will be a very dynamic visual that will pose a very interesting question. Let's just say that. I think if anybody remembers this interview, when they see it in September 20th, they'll say, now it makes sense why you made that statement. So giving you guys a little hint right there.
Well, and is the idea, when you start doing these things with it, to take basketball out of the equation?
Oh, absolutely not. And I think Andy can speak to that.
Yeah, I think this is basically a sports story that takes place in the art world. So the sport and basketball component to this is definitely a part of that overall narrative. It's part of Milwaukee history and our sports history, as well as a symbol of thinking big creatively and helping to make us a creative place that we're in now.
Well, and so do you have plans for it after the September exhibit at City Hall?
Yes. So basically what's going to happen is the mecha sculpture, which is a smaller version of the large sculpture, which the large sculpture takes all 260 pieces. So we're going to take, for this City Hall exhibit, we're going to take 40 pieces. We're going to put it into a really interesting shape, curate an exhibit specifically for City Hall, which is part of what we call the new MECCA acronym, which stands for Milwaukee Entertainment, Creativity, Commerce, and Athletics. So we pick five places all around Milwaukee that were kind of tied to those different areas and audiences. So the Milwaukee themed exhibit is going to be the City Hall, and it will tell the story of how, like what we're talking about now, how the MECCA floor came about and its significance for the city. Following that, we're going to be going to the Bradley Center for the kickoff of Bucks and Marquette season. So then it's, again, tying in the athletics with the art. And then from there, we're looking to go to the convention center. And then the two spots that are going to be the remaining spots, we're in the process of kind of working out those deals. So we really can't talk about those. But so, you know, September, City Hall, end of October, you know, Bradley Center, and then we'll be moving to the convention center. And then after that year, we'll be going around the nation. So we have a couple spots that we're considering right now and a couple places that we're beginning those conversations. So the hope is to let Milwaukee see what we created, we as a community, for a year, and then put it on tour for a year or two in hopes and with the intention that in that time frame, we as a community and as a city realize what we have with the Milwaukee Bucks, and we can build an arena that's not just for athletics, but also an arena that can integrate art and creativity and entertainment and community aspects so that we could have this complex. And I think that around that time is when we'll begin the discussions of bringing the MECCA floor home and potentially, you know, hopefully working with the architects and the design teams that are building the arena to actually build some sort of wing or some sort of wall or some sort of something where the MECCA floor can be there. And that's the intention for the end game. The end game is kind of far away, but we do know that at some point the MECCA floor needs to be in the next athletic facility that is used for both, you know, Marquette and Bucks sports, as well as something, you know, that's a creative place to be too. So it's exciting to think about that one day, you know, in 2017, I might be able to walk into the arena with my partner and look up on a wall and see the MECCA floor and say, wow, look at the journey that we just took from 2010 from an email as a joke email to, you know, 7 years later looking at the world's largest pop art painting in this incredible new arena with a really great NBA team and a big community boost behind it. So when I go to sleep at night and I dream, that's what I dream, is that someday, you know, my children and my children's children can go to games and look at that piece and say, hey, a group of really inspired people saved it, recreated it, and then brought it back to what it was. And I think that that's the interesting part of the story, is that it's not changing, but it is changing. And it's kind of like your community, right? Your community kind of keeps that ethos or that idea of itself, but the world is always revolving and progressing. And I think that that's the reason why we decided, besides spacing issues for the sculpture, but we wanted to say, hey, let's take a different look at this. Let's pose ourselves different questions of why art is important, why sports are important. I mean, those are the two most cut things in our education system right now, and those are the two things that we're waving the flags for with this exhibit. And underlining as a altruistic motivation for me is to continue to wave those flags for the importance of art and athletics in our youth and in our community and in our city. So it's exciting to think about that we could actually be part of that dialogue.
It is it's a very exciting story. And thanks to both of you for sharing it with us, and best of luck.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. We hope to see all Milwaukee out tonight.
Yep.
Ben Kohler and Andy Gorzalski formed Our MECCA Group, which is putting the basketball court from the U.S. Cellular Arena, formerly called MECCA, on display tonight at the arena. The art exhibit that uses parts of the court will open at Milwaukee City Hall September 20th. You can find a link to more, plus more of our conversation, at wuwm.com/lakeeffect. One last break, and then we'll talk with actor Sean Astin. He stars in a movie wrapping up filming in Milwaukee today. This is Lake Effect on Milwaukee Public Radio.